Good day, good night, and welcome to the All Elite Review Show with myself, Kevin Laramie, and Jason Hagholm. Episode 10 of IEW Dynamite on TNT and TSN. But first of all, how you doing, Jason?
I'm doing well, Kevin. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. Busy week on the network, and we invite the listeners to check all the shows offered on the Sports Podcast Network. You can find all the podcasts at sportspodcastnetwork.com. But also, Jason, it's the holiday season. It's officially December. That's when I put my regular decorations at home, and also my virtual decoration. It has been a little hobby of mine to try to decorate and bring a little Christmas joy through our video podcast.
Yeah, the Christmas season is in full effect, as today is December the 4th, and only a few more days away before the big fat guy in the red suit will be giving the presents out to all the good little boys and good little girls, and we're here to talk about another pretty good episode of AEW Dynamite.
I thought so, too. And just before we dig deep into AEW Dynamite, the rankings came out last Friday. They always come out on Fridays, and now you can find them on the website, which I thought it was pretty hilarious. But on the men's side, Jon Moxley is your number one contender, followed by Pac, 301 for Jon Moxley, Pac 4-2-1. And I like that it's only the top five, and that's what I mean. Only show a little bit of the rankings. Don't show all of it. So you can hide a few losses here and there, and the storyline can take over and only show the rankings that you want to highlight. Example, on the women's side, Hikaru Shida is number one contender at the beginning of this show, and depending on the results of today's show, maybe she won't. And I think that's what's important with the rankings. So we're seeing adjustment in the way they are handling some of the rankings, and I kind of like the fact that you only have a top five rankings and not like every single contender, maybe like 20 in each division. Then it wouldn't make sense. It would be too transparent. You kind of need to hide a few things here in wrestling still. But top five, I dig it.
Well, I mean, top five, that's what like the college football playoff is doing for the NCAA. May as well make it a top five. I just think there's still way too much 50-50 booking, especially in the women's side of things. Like the men's division, you kind of know who the big players are right now, and that's pretty much who you thought would be going into the dawn of the promotion. But the women's side is still just way too all over the place, and there's no real solid foundation for it, as we'll definitely get into on this episode of Dynamite.
Yes, exactly. So let's start tonight from Champaign, Illinois, the State Farm Center, happily named for some bubbly tonight, Champaign, Illinois. And did you know, Jason, that the company, the wine company that Chris Jericho and AEW got into partnership with, and AEW sold 12,000 bottles of wines of a little bit of the bubbly over the last week? That's like number one in the United States, pretty much. So that's kind of insane, too.
Well, I mean, you market that pretty good, as they have. It's a unique piece of wrestling merchandise right around the holidays. I think it's something that is unique in its own sense. So what the hell? May as well get a bottle or two. And I'm sure, and Black Friday, Cyber Monday deals as well. So that probably helped on the selling of those bottles of the bubbly.
So if the wife
the
is AEW listening,
fan base. So I think it's pretty cool. And we'll definitely see that promoted as the weeks continue as well, especially so close getting to New Year's.
So if my wife is listening, a little bit of the bubbly.com, get me a little bottle, two bottles for $46. Shameless plug, we don't get anything, but that kind of, it's a neat little storyline and I like it. The night starts off with the Young Bucks and Dustin Rhodes versus Santana and Ortiz with Sammy Guevara. Santana and Ortiz, number one contender in the tag team division, number two for the Young Bucks. That was a good match. It was a match that actually highlighted Dustin Rhodes. And I thought that was, yeah, he looked great. First of all, his attire to fit with the Young Bucks makes you think that this might not be just a one-time thing. Maybe they'll be tag teaming a lot, but this was the first time ever Dustin Rhodes, Gold Dust, Rain, call him whatever you like, the first time that he ever teamed up with the Young Bucks, and that was a good match to start up the night.
I thought this was arguably the best match in the 2 month run of AEW Dynamite. Just so much back and forth action. There was a storyline between everyone involved. And as you mentioned, like, Dustin Rhodes is 50 years old and he's right now arguably the best he's ever been in his career right now. Just fitting in with his old school knowledge into the new school style. I'm just continued to be blown away by Dustin Rhodes each and every week. Some real innovative spots, like when Dustin Rhodes was able to hit that Canadian Destroyer. Like, we've seen guys that are, you know, maybe in their, you know, 50s or late 40s that need the support to do it. He did that perfectly all the way around.
Well, the Rock and Roll Express Sammy a couple Guevara of weeks ago, right?
Hit some big spots as well. Just a great back and forth tag team match. Like, the match that AEW's really set out the blueprint to be, just a hot start that gets everyone excited, gets the crowd going, and then, you know, you settle in with another couple hours of Dynamite.
It was a good way to open up the night. I really agree with you. One thing that caught my attention too, there was a sign that says Cornette blocked me. That made me laugh. That was a good sign. And I like the signs in AEW. The fan base really brings out their creativity and their humor for the signs.
Yeah, that they do. And whoever was blocked by Cornette, hey, join the club.
Join the club. It's one of the biggest club in the wrestling community. Flapjack on Dustin. And oh, I believe, but no, he kicks out. And Sammy Guevara, after the flapjack on Dustin, of course, goes on the top turnbuckle and video live streams on his device. I don't know if it's Twitch, YouTube, or TikTok, maybe. I don't know. TikTok, what the F is TikTok? I still try to figure that out. But Sammy Guevara live broadcasting, jumps, and of course gets super kicked in the face and leads to their demise. Young Bucks, Dustin Rhodes wins the opener.
Yeah, real fun match. Like I said, arguably the best match that's been on AEW Dynamite since the launch of it back in October. Though us in Canada seemed like we had the best version of Dynamite, because there was way too many audio issues apparently on TNT in the United States, and that definitely would affect your enjoyment of this match. But for us, we had no issues and the show ran smoothly from start to finish.
I was gonna talk to you about it because I was mentioning the same thing. I was like, well, I didn't get any audio issues. It was crisp. It was like once or twice it cut out from like barely half a second. That happens. But it was crisp, clear, no audio issues. So I guess it was with the TNT feed and not the TSN feed that you did have problems. So that's another benefit of living in Canada, I guess. But yeah, you're right. No audio issues for us. Some audio issues for our American listeners.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, for us, we didn't have it. And I thought this match was great. Just a unique finish as well. I love the spot as well where Guevara hit his 630 and then they hit the double drop kick into the, and then taking the back bump from Guevara. Just fantastic stuff. And like, that's what you want to see. A match that got the crowd going, told a pretty decent story in some way, because we know the heated rivalry between Santana and Ortiz and the Young Bucks, and now incorporating Dustin Rhodes into it as well. So more of those matches each and every week, please, AEW.
Well, next week there's a Young Bucks versus Santana and Ortiz in a street fight. So that will be very interesting, live from Corpus Christi, Texas, next year. Oh, I love the fact that they go to cities like Champaign and Corpus Christi. Yeah, that's how I know my geography. That's why I used to work in the hospitality industries. Now I do this full time. But back then, I was working in the hospitality industries. And someone would be like, oh, yeah, I'm from Greensboro. I'm like, I know Greensboro. Greensboro Coliseum. He's like, how the heck do you know that? I'm like, Ric Flair. He's like, oh, wow, really? I love that this is back in my life, Jason. Corpus Christi next week. Champaign, Illinois this week. One day, Greensboro Coliseum. You never know where AEW is going to go.
Well, they have a lot of they're running a lot of the South right now to head out into the end of 2019, and then New Year's Day they'll be Bash at the Beach in Miami. Or no, sorry, Jacksonville, the homecoming show.
That would be amazing. A bash at the beach. I hope they actually go on the beach. That was awesome. Anyways, let's get back on track. Trent of the Best Friends, accompanied by Chuck Taylor and Orange Cassidy, versus Rey Fénix. I guess someone's listening, Jason. No tag team matches back to back this week. That felt good. And I guess it's not by a coincidence. But Trent, without, it's a singles match, and you had Pentagon and Chris Daniels later on, so Rey Fénix and Pentagon separated in singles match on today's show, but Trent versus Rey Fénix in a good match. I really liked this one. I really liked how it ended to Rey Fénix, of course, with the win, and the great, I don't even know what the finishing move is called, like a twirling type of tombstone, whatever, but yeah, it looked really good.
I thought the match was good. Excuse me. I thought the match was good. I didn't think the crowd was super invested in it. But, I mean, anytime you get Trent and Fénix in there, I mean, the odds of it being good are like 95, 99%. So that's exactly what we got. Just good back and forth wrestling, just showing the level of talent that they have. But this is my issue with this match, is the past few weeks, whether it was on AEW Dark and then last week on Dynamite, we see Trent slash the Best Friends building some momentum up, pinning the Lucha Bros, both Fénix and Pentagon, and then here Fénix pins Trent. So all the momentum that you've built in 2 weeks for something starting to go the right way for the Best Friends killed instantly. There was a lot of 50-50 booking on this show that I think really, really hurt the show tonight in a lot of ways, and the biggest one we will get to shortly, but I didn't understand the logic in this. I mean, obviously you want Fénix and Pentagon, the Lucha Bros, to turn the tide a bit from being two teams that have taken some losses, but I thought you were going in a good direction with the Best Friends, and they now take a loss. And then when we went to commercial, it was like, they went to for Trent to wanted Fénix to shake his hand, but that was in the side box. I'm like, that's kind of an important angle that I guess this feud between them isn't over. And it was just like, well, no, you got to pay attention in the side box. There was way too much of that as well, where big moments were still happening to continue storylines in the side box when commercials were going on.
Maybe they missed their cues by a few minutes. Maybe that wasn't supposed to be in the side box, but it's not like it's decided on the fly, right? You have certain cues that you have to hit time mark, especially in today's TV age. So wouldn't be surprised if that wasn't supposed to be the case, but who knows? It is what it is, but I agree with you. And it's when you think about it, I think the 50-50 booking that you mentioned for a couple of matches, and I assume you mean the Akira Shida match later on too, is because it's the rankings fault, because they had too many people with similar rankings, and probably like, okay, we can only put so many people at the same time. So, well, unfortunately, Trent, you're looking at the lights tonight.
Yeah, but I mean, that's where your booking on rankings is going to be a problem. Too much 50-50 booking, and it's just going to overall affect your product in a negative light instead of in the positive light that you were hoping for.
Yep. Cody comes out with Tony Schiavone in the ring, start talking about that he's like, my life is just a weird place right now. My wife is cutting hair of the women's division. My best friend turned on me and threw in the towel and hit me in the balls, and now he's talking about MJF and how you say you're never gonna fight me, but you know what, let me sweeten the deal. And I took my notepad, I took my pen, and I started to add up. So a Ford Black Ops, only one of 300. That's worth probably $50,000 by itself, if not a lot more here, Jason. A timepiece Omega C, courtesy of Tony Khan himself. An Omega C Master. That's a couple grand, too. That's like $4,000. He says it's the most expensive thing he had on his body. Red Bottoms Louis Vuitton shoes, another few grand here. Plus $50,000 of hard cash. We're looking at a value of close to $250,000 here. A quarter of $1 million to face Cody Rhodes for MJF if he decides to accept.
Yeah, I thought this was an excellent segment. Once again, when they give Cody mic time, it's always appointment television and a must-watch segment. And this was no other. I mean, he hit all the points of everything that's going on with him about the attack last week from the Butcher, Blade, and the Bunny, where we get a match set up for next week where it's Cody, and he said that the Butcher and the Blade can pick his partner, so they did. It'll be QT Marshall and Cody taking on the Butcher and the Blade next week from Corpus Christi. Mentioned, as you said, about his wife cutting off hair, and then throughout all the options for what he's going to put up on the line to get a match with MJF, and threw a little diss as well at the competition about, MJF messing up and botching his Crossroads, and said at least two people are botching this on
On two
both
channels.
shows.
Yeah, you can see it botched on two channels now.
Yeah, like I thought, I mean, it got a nice pop, but once again, this company's been talking way too much about NXT
I agree.
recently. I just think they should just keep doing what they've been doing and worry about their own stuff instead about NXT. Nonetheless, this was a really good promo segment, and it goes back to the old days, as you said, about $250,000 up for grabs right now that MJF has to say, yes, I'll wrestle Cody for. But that's just, the old school bounty type stuff that we saw back, on the build to the original Starrcade between Ric Flair and Harley Race and for 1983. I mean, that's just stuff I love. And then we just, continues the storyline, a slow burn of this storyline, which that's the one thing AEW does much better than anyone else right now,
That's
is the
true.
slow build towards to the big matches.
Like the levels of storyline where you have the immediate, because they don't have 12 pay-per-views a year, right? So that's the way you book, and that's how WCW used to have it too. Because at one point, yes, they did have 12 pay-per-views, but at one point they didn't, and they only had so many big shows in 4 or 5 quarterly or so. So you had to build in a different way where you have semi-important feud where the blow-off match will be on TV. The blow-off match will be on an edition of AEW Dynamite, like the Butcher and the Blade and Bunny and Cody Rhodes. That's like the mid-level feud. And in the background, being built is the big feud, which example, if you want to use both feud in the same segment, during the Butcher and the Blade match versus Cody, MJF comes out of the ring with his scarf and does something, right? So you pay homage to one storyline and you use the other storyline in the background to continue to hype your big money match that will happen on pay-per-view for sure. But at least you build another match for three characters of your roster for December 18th. So I like that fact that they use the distance and time between pay-per-views and they fill a couple of placeholder type of feuds with an example of Cody Rhodes and the Butcher and the Blade, which I love the Butcher with his freaking monocle and his tattoos and his beard and mustache. Yeah, looks awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it was a solid segment, and we get to see Cody once again in the ring before we have 2 weeks left of 2019 for Dynamite before they have that New Year's Day show in Jacksonville as they take the week off for Christmas, which I like and I'm sure the talent love. So yeah, I thought this was a bang-up job and a great segment.
Janela promo, and that's a Macho Man Randy Savage inspired promo, if I've ever seen one from Janela. But of course, when you look at Joey Janela, you have the aspects of Randy Macho Man, the elbow drop for sure, the promo aspect, and some what's his name? Oh, geez, I forget now. Bam Bam Bigelow, some Bam Bam Bigelow inspired move set too. And of course, he says he's from Asbury Park, like Bam Bam Bigelow used to say too. But the Janela promo channeling Randy Savage, and then Jon Moxley just walks in the frame, looks at him, is like, kids. Like, I kind of liked it because he was so intense, Joey Janela, and going dark, and oh, you're gonna have to kill me this time. Jon Moxley comes up like, dude, no, I'll see you in the ring. Yeah, I kind of liked it too. Nice vignette.
I like the promo from Janela. It was something we haven't seen from him, especially how he's been handled on Dynamite the past couple weeks, you know, in that feud that's clearly now over with Sean Spears. But I mean, we saw the most fire out of him in that promo. We saw his, you know, ability to cut amazing promos, but I don't think you needed to have Moxley come into the frame and just say kids. Like, it was funny, but it's almost like the big kid at the table just patting the little brother on the head, like, yeah, okay. Like,
you're cute.
Just let Janela have that moment.
That's true. I agree. I haven't seen it that way, but now that you mention it, it's true. It does take some of the edge away from Janela. But he was going to give back the edge later on. It was a pretty good match in the main event, but we'll talk about this later. Another Dark Order vignette, a longer one, where you see the continuation of the storyline of the fat guy with the beard and the other fat guy with no beard who joins for the right reason and the other one who doesn't. So I guess if you join the Dark Order for revenge purposes, you're good to go. You're in. You're edgy enough. You're dark enough. But if you join to make friends, yeah, you're going to get beat up.
Yeah, I thought that was... I'm loving these vignettes or storyline progression of the Dark Order and why you have to join them and reasons for that. I just think the production value has been great, but this has been real fun, and it's added so much interest into the Dark Order from when they started in AEW and, you know, got the first couple matches on Dynamite. Like, no interest in them, but now there's all this curiosity, like... who would they be able to recruit, I should say. And then this gentleman that now got assaulted by all the minions, like, what's going to happen with him? Is he going to play a factor in next week? Like, I don't know, but I'm interested to see where this story goes.
Poor guy. I don't know if they hired... I guess I do know, because the acting was so good that they have to be real actors. Like... come on. But it's, I like the fact that they do that. They don't. It gives so much. And the production values, Butcher and the Blade promo later on, and the Dark Order vignette there, and just the type of framing and the production values of the camera angles and everything, even for the Janela promo, it's high value, and it brings a lot, and brings a lot to the feel of the show, which is what you want. You want to be transported into a world that feels like it's real. And looks real enough that it makes you believe. But the Dark Order stuff, you don't, it's not real, but you know what I mean? You have to be portrayed as real. And I really like how AEW is doing this. And Nyla Rose comes out, squash match versus Leva Bates. A 3-match winning streak, which I guess is now a 4-match winning streak. But because Nyla Rose touched an official, she has been suspended from in-ring competition indefinitely by AEW. So that's one way to, because she becomes probably number one contender with her record now, but you are able to delay her push to the top of the women's ranking because she's now suspended indefinitely. I guess that's the way you get out of the booking of the number one contender and the champion that is Rhea.
Yeah, I mean, I thought, like, obviously, excuse me, we've been talking about on the past couple weeks, like, when they do squash matches on AEW Dynamite, like, they still work, they still get talent over, and they've been doing a good job of that, especially with Nyla really making her this badass and just showcasing how different she is. And then we saw a bit of a storyline progression with a feud with Shanna from last week, where at a meet and greet, she beat her up and then powerbombed her through a table. But this was the one thing. So, yes, you have your squash match. She beats up both librarians. And then we went to commercial. And this is where the angle really took off, where you had Shanna run in, end up getting beaten down by Nyla Rose. Nyla went to get a table. And all this is happening in the small window, and gets the table, powerbombs referee Rick Knox through the table, and then Shanna on top of Rick Knox. And then they also cut to Britt Baker in the crowd doing the same reaction she did at NXT War Games a couple weekends ago when Adam Cole took that insane air raid crash off the top of the cage through a table. It was almost like, hey, this is our talent. Let's do that. Like, that was so second rate. Like, not even WCW bad. That was like TNA 2011 bad that they did that. And just...
well, it's the same people.
Gotta get your P's and Q's right when you're gonna do it. Like, finally, we get some more storyline progression in the women's division, and it's all in a sidebar. that has to be worked out, and that has to be a lot more organized, because that's the division that's lacking in this company. And for you to just build a storyline and build a character development where, hey, I got to look at this Amazon commercial more importantly, that's a huge miss.
Well, you mentioned TNA in 2011. Well, there's some people working now with AEW that were doing TNA in 2011 and even WCW. It's that crew. That crew with Jeff Jarrett in 2001, again, 2004, TNA started. So it's the same crew that came after WCW, so the ones, technicians, and there's some writers, I imagine, also, too. So that's why some segments, some have resemblance sometime in the one you mentioned. But let's move on to the next segment, which I really loved once again, because it was Jericho. And it was, yes, recycled stuff. Yes, I agree. But still, a couple of gems here in his promo in Champagne. So of course he comes out, he's like, oh, Jericho and Champagne for Lit in the Bubblies, but you're a bunch of losers here in Champagne. No one from Champagne has ever done anything as successful as I have. Yep, I was laughing because it's true. It's true.
Yeah, that was, you know, maybe not the greatest Jericho promo segment, but I thought he was still awesome, still perfect. Brought out a list, but it's not called the list anymore, as he brought it out and said it's the lexicon of Les Champions. And the whole point of it was saying that he's not going to wrestle certain guys until the end of 2019. Mentioned John Moxley's name like 800 times. Also said Alan Jones in there, who, of course, if you don't know, that's AJ Styles.
I have the list in front of me.
Oh, please do read.
Oh, yes, I will. It's a callback of two things. It's a callback of his list that he used to do in WWE, which thing, but also with the callback of Moxley about 10 times, it's the callback of the armbar in the 10,000, the one on four list in WCW. So it's kind of like callbacks of two moments of Chris Jericho's career. The lexicon of Le Champion goes as is. Moxley, Cody Rhodes, The Young Bucks, Buck Owen, Papa Bucks, Moxley, Hangman Page, D. Diamond Dallas Page, Page, Moxley, Scorpio Sky, Too Cold Scorpio, any members of the Scorpions, which got a great pop. Moxley, Michael Nakazawa, Kenny from South Park, Kenny Omega, Kenny Ortega, Kenny Shields, Kenny Chesney, Kenny from South Park, Moxley, the chubby guy with the white popcorn in the fifth row, ugly guy with the dumb glasses in the third row, Moxley, Darby Allin, Rick Allen, Alan Jones, Moxley, Evil Uno, Angry Dos, and Hateful Priest, Moxley, and then Jungle Boy comes out. I was laughing. This was great.
Yeah, like, once again, Jericho's just perfect. As you said, it really is just a callback to the list from 2016, as Jericho mentioned. But yes, more so a callback to the list of 1,004 holds that Chris Jericho knew in WCW back in 1998. But as well, we get a segment where Jericho is willing to work with some young talent and some talent that I guess need the more exposure, being the Jurassic Express, Marco Stunt, Jungle Boy, and Luchasaurus. They came out, and I thought Luchasaurus nailed his promo.
Yeah, he did.
He came out, you know, took the center of the ring and talked with confidence in front of Jericho. And then we really get a match set up that it's Jericho and Jungle Boy December 18th for the AEW title. I'm really looking forward to that. I think Jungle Boy's definitely been one of the better undercard talents in AEW. I mean, obviously, the win-loss record isn't showing that where they're progressing him, but obviously they see a lot in him that or Jericho's maybe interested in working with him, that we get that match before the Christmas break.
Yeah, no, I agree also. And I think it was a great segment. The fact that they give Luchasaurus the ability to go toe-to-toe with the champion on the mic like this, and the fact that he held his own is important. The fact that they're able to hype up Marco Stunt, too. I like the fact that, yeah, Marco Stunt might be small, and I did like Chris Jericho's sentence that he said. Yeah, Marco Stunt is small for any age.
That was funny.
I'm laughing so much at Chris Jericho. This is so refreshing to me. But it brings a nice sunshine in my life every Wednesday, I guess. Marco Stunt, like, oh, he's maybe more man than you'll ever be. And then he's all pumped up like, are we going to get Marco Stunt versus Chris Jericho? But no, Jungle Boy, of course, was the main protagonist here for the antagonist Chris Jericho. And I like the fact that they went there without going there. What I mean is, he did call him the Hollywood and mentioned his name and his last name, Perry. But I like the fact that they didn't allude to his father's passing also a couple of months back, but it did allude to his lineage and the Hollywood and Hollywood Jungle Boy, which if he ever turns heel, you gotta go with Hollywood Jungle Boy, because man, that would sell a bunch of merchandise, and he's got the looks and everything. But no, I really enjoyed that segment, and you're right, it did give some shine on Luchasaurus and the Jurassic Express, and they were desperately in need of some shining.
Yeah, for sure, they definitely were, and I think that'll be a really fun match on the 18th with Jericho and Jungle Boy. As well, maybe we'll get a program out of the Big Hurt, Jake Hager, taking on Luchasaurus, because those two just looked really fun when they were brawling with each other to close out that segment.
That would make sense, and they're both big too, so you can probably find a way to have them face each other and still have some heat for both coming out of it.
Also, should mention, there's been a lot of slagging by me a little bit on certain things on AEW. The one thing I liked is that literally, Luchasaurus, they're treating as a human being, not some stupid dinosaur. Like, I thought, like, other companies would make him just just roar and whatever. Like, he did that, but, like, oh, you didn't realize I got a master's degree in, like, medieval history. Like, whoa, didn't know that as well. But, I mean, seems like a real interesting person, and he had such a great promo against someone with such experience in those big moments and those big stages like a Chris Jericho.
Here's the match that you were talking about earlier. Chris Statlander and Hikaru Shida. Chris Statlander made her debut last week in a tag team match, and she got pinned in her debut, and she was touted as maybe the best prospect in the world of wrestling and maybe in the world of sports in general. She was facing Hikaru Shida, and she beat Hikaru Shida. Hikaru Shida was the number one contender in the women's division, and she lost to someone not even ranked in AEW in Chris Statlander. That's a 50-50 booking you were talking about earlier.
Yeah, like, they were hyping up Shida as like, oh, you know, she's the number one contender, gonna take on Rio. She's won three in a row and loses to someone just in her second match on AEW TV. Like, I don't understand that logic. Like, if you're building someone up to wrestle for a title, build someone up to wrestle for a title, not, oh, well, out of nowhere this happens. Like, sure, that could happen in other sports like that, like with rankings and tiers, like in college football or in mixed martial arts. But this is wrestling. You can also control that a little bit. You don't have to do all these wild card things or whatever. Totally 50-50 booking. You're building someone up to wrestle for the title in a division that needs solid contenders. Build them that way. You don't need to have someone else come in there, especially in Statlander, who's like in her second match. Like, not necessary.
I agree. I guess the only reason they did this is because they regret the way they treated Statlander last week, and they wanted to bring Shida a bit down because they want to keep and maybe the Riho storyline on top and with her next program. So we'll see. But after this comes out, of course, Brandi Rhodes and Awesome Kong, and they go to talk to Chris Statlander and said, oh, you had nothing to do with my business, but now you're in my business, so I've got an offer for you. You either join us, take the pledge, and you're going to be exposed. We're going to elevate you and everything and all that. But then a fan started yelling, and of course it felt like a plant, and probably was, of course. So a fan girl comes in, and she says, I'm going to take the pledge. I pledge. So she kneels on the apron, and she gets her head not shaved, but she does get her hair cut by a blade by Awesome Kong. I don't know about you, but felt like she really trusted Awesome Kong with that blade. Just a little slip of the hair and you got yourself a scalp. I don't know. I was a bit worried that something bad was going to happen.
Yeah, that was, like, I mean, always a risk, but got to trust someone, like, with the knife, and that's exactly what they did. I mean, more development on Brandy and Awesome Kong. They call themselves an extension of the Nightmare family, or they're now the Nightmare Collective, okay? but
I agree, okay, that's about it.
Like, I don't know, like, they were adding to more, another cult faction, it seems like. We have the Dark Order.
There's, like, three, yeah.
There's three, yeah. There's the Dark Order. The Blade, the Butcher, and the Bunny are kind of like a cult, I guess.
They have masks and they're black, so there's a cult.
And then now this Nightmare Collective, like, three cults.
Like, jeez. Make
up your mind. Like, someone in creative is a fan of David Koresh and cults. So every faction has to be a cult, and then this fan or the plant was like, no, I'll pledge. And then Kong like scalped her during the commercial, like a commercial break that they actually went to full on commercial. So the timing of cues was not key at all.
Nope.
So clearly the Nightmare Collective is a little bit like CM Punk's Straight Edge Society, whether you get scalped when you join.
I guess it is. Yeah.
But this one still has like no momentum at all.
And you mentioned cult. You mentioned a lot of cults and maybe someone in creative with an affinity for cults. Let's not forget the original cult, the leader of, what is it called? Wow, geez, I forget the name, but the Kevin Sullivan's cult.
Oh, the Dungeon of Doom.
The Dungeon of Doom. Yeah, Kevin Sullivan works for AEW, so there you go.
Well, let's never have the Dungeon of Doom on my TV again, because that was one of the worst things in 95. And in 2019, that's the last thing we need. It's just more, way too many. Like, Sullivan's a genius, don't get me wrong, but
he likes
way
cults.
Too much of the same.
Yep, but you're
it's
right.
Like, we have a pepperoni pizza, a cheese pizza, and a ham pizza.
Yeah, but pizza's good. I guess someone
pizza's
really likes
good,
pizza.
But those pizzas are so similar.
They are.
Like, give me a deluxe pizza or a veggie pizza or something different.
Chris Daniels, the Fallen Angel versus Pentagon Jr. This match had some bad blood. Chris Daniels, of course, was injured by Pentagon Jr. and had to miss the tournament. And that's why he's not the tag team champion. It's Scorpio Sky and Frankie Kazarian. But Chris Daniels versus Pentagon, and of course Pentagon had to win this match, because I feel that this is where it's going, and I've talked to you about this before. I think this leads to the eventual full-on turn of Chris Daniels into the Fallen Angel. The full-on turn will happen in a few weeks, maybe in a couple months still, but he'll need to go to the dark side to beat Pentagon, and that's when he's going to turn on the rest of SCU, I feel, because he's not a champion, right? He doesn't have that belt, but I think this is where it's going, because he did all he could. He even hit his damn finish, and I believed it. And of course, no, he was going to use the golf club, but no, decides to stay clean. Yeah, I'm going to finish this like a good guy. So he doesn't use the foreign object. He puts it down. The referee looks at the foreign object falling on the canvas. And while this happens, Pentagon kicks him in the balls and hits his finish for the 1, 2, 3. This is exactly how this match had to finish. And I believe this is exactly where it's going, where for Daniels to win, he's going to have to go full Fallen Angel. And then the ramifications of this will be he's going to turn on the rest of SCU.
I mean, you may have something there with that, in the sense of that the rest of SCU wasn't out there, where Fenix came to run an interference to help out his brother Pentagon in this match. But as there's no SCU to bail or help out Christopher Daniels, but I didn't like this match at all.
No, the match was
I didn't think they gelled at all for some reason. I mean, these are two excellent talents, and I don't know, something was missing. And then, of course, the icing on the cake in this match is when Daniels went to hit the split-legged moonsault on the apron, and he ended up slipping, going face first on that huge stage that AEW uses. It's just like, oh, that's just unfortunate and just insult to injury, or injury to insult as well.
Not the first time. It's the second time since he's back, Jason, that he botches a move and falls face first on something. So
yeah,
eventually he's going to get injured.
Yeah, just not a great match, and kind of took the wind out of the crowd a little bit, especially as we're heading towards the end of the show. Not the type of match you'd expect these two to have. I trust they'd be able to have a better match, correcting some things, but this one didn't really work out for me. But maybe a storyline progression is happening for Daniels, and you could be onto something.
The Butcher and the Blade promo. I like that. Neither of them really talked. That's what you want. The Bunny's going to talk for the Butcher and the Blade. And I like the fact that she pointed out which was which. She pointed out that the Butcher's the big fat guy with the mustache and the monocle. So imagine Mr. Monopoly with a brown mustache, taller, a bit chubbier with tattoos. Then you got your Butcher, and the Blade is the black mask with the two kind of like buttons, white buttons for eyes. And Bunny, well, that's the Bunny.
Yeah, I mean, just establishes a group of people that no one really knew who they were last week. And we know that they're having their first tag team match next week against Cody and QT Marshall.
Yep, we know that. And they said, we come here to make a splash, and it was our first order of chaos, and we're here to cut the head of a snake. Speaking of Cody, then there were Bad Boy Joey Janela versus John Moxley, who is the number one contender. 20-minute main event or TV time remaining. This was a good wrestling match. Of course, when you think about Joey Janela and John Moxley, you obviously think of a hardcore street fight, lights out type of match, but this was a pure wrestling match. It did put the heat a lot on Moxley. They put a lot of the shine on Janela, but at the end of the day, a paradigm shift on the top turnbuckle, then a very deep paradigm shift on the top of Janela's head for the 1-2-3. Chris Jericho's music starts. Where is he? We don't know. We can't see him. And then in the parody of John Moxley, comes down the stairs with the Inner Circle and looks down on Moxley. So we got ourselves the continuation of this program, the number one contender, John Moxley, versus Le Champion in a few weeks. But Le Champion will have to face Jungle Boy first.
Yeah, I thought the main event was good. I think Moxley and Janela have a lot of great chemistry. I thought this one added a lot more elements than the first match, which of course was an unsanctioned match and didn't affect the rankings. Janela got to showcase his in-ring ability, more so show that he's a real good wrestler, which is something that he's been open about wanting to do here in AEW. But I liked how, you know, Janela hit Moxley with some insane dives and some insane moves through some plunder, if you will, but couldn't put Moxley away. Then Moxley just came out and hit that big paradigm shift, got the win. And as you said, at the end, it's Jericho and the Inner Circle coming out in the same way that Moxley did last week. And we know that those two are in the collision course for obviously the first pay-per-view in the first quarter of 2020 for AEW.
That will make a lot of sense. And next week in Texas, we're going to have the Young Bucks versus Santana and Ortiz in a street fight. I don't know if it's going to be the main event. And recently, when AEW announces a match for the next week, it hasn't been the main event because today the six-man tag team match was a match that was announced last week, but it wasn't a main event. We'll see where this match will be next week, but that's where we're going next week. The Young Bucks versus Pride and Powerful in a tag team street fight for next week's episode of AEW Dynamite, which will be episode 11 next week.
Yeah, I mean, only a couple more episodes left this year. I mean, we have, I think, two really, because the Christmas break on the Christmas Day episode, they aren't doing one, giving the talent some time off to spend with their families. I mean, rightfully so, as they should. But yeah, I mean, the thing also with they set up this match, this street fight, but they did it through Twitter. Like, that was a big enough segment. You thought that they could have the backstage promo of Santana and Ortiz on Dynamite instead of just an Twitter or Instagram or Facebook upload. Like, they really gotta pick their stuff for what gets on the show and what doesn't a lot better, because I think they missed the boat a lot this week on time on commercials with big angles happening, and then something like that to set up a big match for next week. A big miss this week for AEW.
Yeah, it was mentioned in a graphic in the lower third, but that's about it during the show. But I guess because the Young Bucks are pretty big on social media, they feel like it's a good way to hype the ratings too by using the Young Bucks social media, maybe, or AEW social media mixed in to help the growth of AEW social media too. Because in our day, like, social media itself is called production. So creating brands and the social media of said brand is actually producing something. So that's one of the aspects of the business model of AEW. So maybe these type of things are generated and happens because of the business aspect and the know-how of where Tony Khan is in this world and how his family made their money, especially now with the sports ventures and the media entertainment ventures too around the world. So makes a lot of sense. But I do agree with you, for the viewer, you're maybe wanting to be treated as important as the social media follower. And you don't want to be treated as, okay, I watch, like, when you watch the TV show, you should get everything. And then if you're just a social media follower, you get what they want you to know on social media. But you should not be missing anything watching the main product they create. So I agree with you.
Yeah, just missed timing on certain things, but there's weeks to grow and time to learn, and they have another week to get better.
And it's only 10 episodes in, but as always, you can follow Jason on social media at jhaghome1, myself at Kev Laramie, and we'll be back next week on the All Elite Review Show live every Wednesday after All Elite Wrestling on Twitter at All Elite Review, and you can find podcasts everywhere you find your podcasts. Google Play Music Store, you can find it on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, and everywhere you get your podcast. But as always, until next week, for Jason, I'm Kevin. We wish you a great wrestling.